back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively doing post-draft stuff around here. It allows me to get together with friends. So be honest with you, I haven't called this guy in a couple months since Super Bowl, since we were together and half high up in the upper deck at the Super Bowl. I mean, we were high up in the upper deck, as I remember. We were positioned very, very high. Yes. Mike Tenier joins us now on the back end of the draft. And like, I'm having you and Ed Holm and a couple of my draftnik buddies on. I'm not going to be overwrought about all these picks and the A grade that you undoubtedly gave the Ravens, but it is interesting, and I know Peter King was embedded with them. For all of us who watch this, they're pretty good at it. You know, even though it's local here, when you watch from outside, they're pretty good at doing this.
Right, and I think you saw a lot of that if you were on Twitter during the draft. Like, the independent voices from around the country who cover various teams kept saying, boy, the Ravens are good at drafting. Boy, another great draft class for the Ravens. And that's what kind of what we were all saying. And really, it is. It's a decades-long history. You know, the Ravens are not always at the top, but they are never at the bottom. And, they're always competitive. And you do that by having outstanding draft classes. And while I did not give them an A, this was a very, very strong draft class by the Ravens.
Did I invite you on a show and you didn't give the Ravens an A? How is that possible?
You got to read the draft grades of Football Outsiders. I gave them a B because, despite the quality of the draft, you needed to come out of this with one wide receiver. You lost Marquise Brown. We can't look at the draft class and pretend.
So the wide receiver thing is why you think that marks them down a notch, because they didn't get one.
They went downward at a position of need. They kind of needed a receiver going in. They lost a receiver. That's a big deal. I think a lot of times when we do draft grades, we look at the class and the names and say, well, that's phenomenal. Sometimes you gave up stuff to do it. And this was obvious in this case. You gave up your number one receiver to do it. You did not bring a receiver back at all. You know, the rumor mill is suggesting you wanted receivers and you got jumped ahead of for some of those receivers. That hurts your grade a little bit. That takes you out of that A range.
All right. Well, Tenier is here. Tell everybody what you do, because I want you to give a full plug, because it's not just you're not just draft nerds. Like, in season, it's even more focused on what you're doing. And I think even more so that when a Hollywood Brown gets moved like this, guys like you start to evaluate, like, 90 catches, 160 targets. They didn't want to take the top off. Was he the wrong guy to take the top off? He was super close with the quarterback, which everybody here knew. There is, and the way they sat on this and created the deal, and he's out in Arizona, the whole thing was a weirdly orchestrated thing. But now the pieces of, well, who's going to catch the football, and what kind of receiver is Bateman at this point for them, and where are they with Prochet and Duvernay and these other guys that on other Monday mornings after drafts, they like these guys.
And I like Duvernay and Prochet after drafts. And I saw them when they were coming onto the Ravens saying, that's probably your wide receiver three type of guy. That's your return man. That's your guy who runs the reverses. That's still who they are after, I believe, 3 and 4 seasons or 2 and 3 seasons. That's who those guys are. The idea, like, you're going to elevate Prochet and Duvernay at this point seems a little ludicrous. Bateman's a different situation. He has the capabilities to be a number one wide receiver. We haven't seen any of that yet. And that's it. That's the roster. I've not looked at the undrafted free agents yet, and there's other guys. And there's talk about how, you're going to bring in Jarvis Landry or something like that. We'll see it when we see it. But that's, and it's not just guys like me. And at Football Outsiders, I'm the senior NFL analyst. So year-round, I'm doing statistical analytics. I'm doing some film stuff. I'm just doing sort of cap stuff. I'm doing all that.
He's being humble. Yeah. He was the former algebra teacher at Joe Flacco up in Jersey. So I just want to put that in there. I always have to throw that in there, that you're a math teacher gone mad. You're Sigma Del on football drugs is what you're on.
Right. But it doesn't take a math teacher to say, 90 catches, number one receiver. That's value. That's value.
The fantasy guy can do that math.
A 14-year-old looking at his fantasy roster says, well, that's a lot. They got to replace that. So we all see that. So it's not nothing. Now, is it insurmountable? I don't know. It looks like the Ravens are really leaning into, we're going to be run heavy as heck with this draft, because we added more tight ends and we added Linderbaum, et cetera. But you need something at wide receiver. I think Ravens fans know that. I think Roman knows. I think Harbaugh knows it. And they didn't quite get that part done this weekend.
Man, you are leading with the caboose. Chad Steele would be appalled that you're talking about the deficiencies of the Ravens. Let's talk about the real draft, though. Let's talk about Kyle Hamilton. Let's talk about Tyler Lindenbaum. Let's talk about what got them up to a B grade from you, Football Outsiders, Mike Tenier. Well, you are the running gun gangster. So this whole running game and playing like, magnets on the old board that, or the Coleco game or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah. That's not your gig, but certainly for what the Ravens want to do, in running the football, this notion of getting a center, and I've been on this with center with them since they lost Matt Burke. I felt like Flacco got lost after Burke left. It was Burke's was a big, big part of the success in the middle of that offensive line when they were winning. And it's a leadership issue. But also, and we'll get to Kyle Hamilton in a minute, but I found the center thing while we're on Hollywood Brown and who's out and who's in, that they've really valued taking a first round center. They haven't done that since like ever.
No, it's rare for teams to take first round centers. And, you know, 2 years ago, they were having a hard time with the shotgun snap, if you remember. I don't think it was as big a problem last year, but your quarterback was hurt half the time last year, so everything was a problem. So it was time to get one. Now, in the case of Linderbaum, this is a guy I originally had as like a top five draft pick in this entire draft. Not wow. top five center, not top five lineman, top five draft pick. One of the best, this best center on film I've seen, I guess, since the Pouncey brothers, you know, who made names for themselves with the Steelers and elsewhere. And, you know, so he goes to the combine. His arms are short. He's only in at about whatever he is, 292, when you expect you want him at about 305 or whatever. And so it's like, okay,
that's
maybe
a meal,
not a top.
Dude. That's a meal. I've
that's
seen
it. Right.
It's a meal.
Right. That's old country buffet. That's all that is, you know.
Kids from Iowa, man. Fatten him up. That's all, right?
Right. And he's not left tackle. He's center. So the arms are a little small, whatever. So, okay, so he drops from my top five to my top 10 or my top 12. He's still the best center prospect on film. And when I was doing mocks, I was like, what? Well, the Ravens need him, but I don't know. They might want the bigger guy because it seemed to me that they wanted the bigger guy. Well, I was off base with that. What they wanted here was that quickness, and it makes sense. They want a guy who can get out in front of their running backs. Okay, he's going to pull, he's going to trap, et cetera, or in front of Lamar, and move quickly and get out to the second level when they run up the power. The guards are going to hammer the big 330-pound guys. Lindenbaum's going to chip them and move out. For that value, that's an incredible player, and you're right, it's a leadership thing too. When you're an Iowa center, you're a leader. Iowa's been producing offensive linemen for the last 25 years. You're trained to be a leader on that line in addition to being a great wrestler, great athlete, great blocker, and that's what Linderbaum brings.
Mike Tenier is here. All of it brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. I am wearing my Chicken Palooza shirt. I'm going to invite the Philly sub guys, the hoagie guys down here to get a proper sub. I'll bring them down here to Royal Farms. It's also being poured inside of my Cole Roofing mug. I want to give Bill Cole a little bit of love here. We're getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road this week. We will be at Conrad's Crabs on Friday from 2 until 5. We'll be in Perry Hall. My buddy Rob Santoni stopping by from Wise Markets. We're going to be giving away Betty Boop scratch-off tickets. You can have the pink or the blue, either way. We have given some winners away at Heavy Seas Brewery a couple weeks ago. Also brought to you by our friends at Goodwill Industries and our new sponsor at Window Nation. So I want to give them some love as they're putting in some buy two windows, get two free. So there you have it. Well, buy one draft pick, get one free, right? I mean, that's the Ravens. We have been talking about them having two number ones the last 4 months. It would have been so exciting. And like, had they dealt Hollywood off on February 19th, we would have had the proper send off and all that. Kyle Hamilton falls. Sounds like a movie star to me. Sounds like a guy that should have been in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Notre Dame kid, probably a top five guy on a lot of boards as a player in the league and size, all of rangy, all of that you would want, but a safety. And I remember when Brian Billick, Ed Reed was lobbying after being the player of the year to be the highest paid player in the sport, I think. Billick said, Ed, your safety. You know what I mean?
Right.
That being said, the Ravens spent a lot of money on safety in the free agent market. I don't think they really looked at this draft and at 14 said, well, we'll get a safety in the draft.
Right.
Or they looked at the draft and said, he's going to be there or likely to be there because maybe that could have been an option. And you want to shore that up. They spent a lot of money shoring that up with Marcus Williams.
Yes.
But this isn't a curious pick. This is one of those things when you sit out there at the Liars Luncheon and DeCosta and Ortiz say, we're going to take the best player available. Well, they did.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. He falls. It didn't look like he was going to fall that far. You know, a couple things had to happen. There was that run on wide receivers right ahead of the Ravens. And it wasn't guaranteed that people were going to be like, oh, I need Chris Olave right now. I need Jameson Williams right now. The Lions need to move up. And that's how Hamilton fell, because a lot of us said, hey, you know what? The Vikings are sitting there. This is a team that kind of needs a safety. For years, they had Harrison Smith. Harrison Smith's getting old. They'll get their replacement. Or the Commanders. They got rid of Landon Collins. They could use a safety. This is a place that they're going to take them. Yeah, or the Texans. Well, they need everything, and this is the best guy on the board. And they're the Texans. They're going to grab him. So there are all these teams. That didn't happen. And credit to the Ravens. Because, again, we talk about the need for a wide receiver. They don't just go out there and grab a wide receiver, the sixth best guy at that point. Okay. They realize, okay, there's a run on wide receivers. Yeah, we're going to grab this player. And what you get is an Ed Reed type of talent. I think he's that level of a talent, maybe a different kind of player, but actually kind of a similar player because he's huge and he plays deep very well and he can come up and support the run. So, you know, that is best player available. You grabbed him. Now you have probably the strongest safety tandem. It makes sense because all your cornerbacks were hurt. And you're not necessarily sure what's coming back at cornerback. And you've got a position that you can work around on your defense.
Well, and more than that, for what they're trying to do and what they're trying to defend, more is better in the secondary, as they found out last year when they couldn't get anybody on the field at the end of the time. And, you know, 1 year left with Peters on the backside. At some point, they're going to be in the corner business. You've already began the conversation saying they're in the wide receiver business. And then there's the running back situation where everybody got hurt last year. Still believe in Dobbins. Still believe that, you know, you're going to be okay with these guys. But all that being said, this is still an offseason of tremendous question for the Ravens. And I don't just mean there are six fourth-round draft picks, right?
A lot of questions, but there are a lot of questions around those draft picks as well. But, yeah, I guess we haven't even talked about yet the idea that you're trying to figure out what Lamar Jackson's contract's going to look like.
And we're going that's business number one, right? For all of this and his feelings and Hollywood Brown wanting the ball and wanting his money and all that.
Right.
For them to get settled business here over the next couple of years, a commitment to Lamar and a Lamar commitment back to them in an environment that has quite frankly become the Wild Wild West, right? I mean, Deshaun Watson's in Cleveland now with the with this contract that has been offensive to basically everybody in the sport. Yeah. I mean, really.
There's a lot of problems with the Watson contract. There's like this sort of moral element to things that, you know, you get everything you want in the situation he got. That's kind of creepy to a lot of us. But from a business standpoint, that contract changes the way the business gets done with quarterbacks. In that, if I am a general manager and I have to guarantee 200 and whatever, what is it? 200 and some million going forward? I don't have the number in front of me.
Well, it's 5 years against your cap at 20%.
And it's 5 years of guarantees. So if you've got Lamar Jackson, he's been running 20 times a game, and you do, okay, I trust he'll be healthy in 2022. Do I trust he'll be healthy in 2026 under these circumstances? Well, I'm going to guarantee that. No, as a general manager, like, I'm not guaranteeing that because you are a smaller guy who runs a lot.
Well, I think it's also put the league into the insurance business now, too.
Right.
That they've always managed to stay out of. I mean, Mike, I famously tell the story here about a guy named Bob Ames, who remained the Orioles number one for 15 years, almost 20 years, after he bought the insurance on the Albert Bell deal. And Peter Angelos thought he was the smartest guy on earth for getting him out from underneath a $65 million contract at that time. $65 million. And Peter would still, if he could sit up and, you know, talk to you at this point, he'd still say it was the greatest thing ever, that there was $50 million he didn't have to pay on an insurance policy.
Right.
Certainly with all these guys now, with the NFL, they're going to be in that business with $250 million quarterbacks running around.
At quarterback, you don't have to because you can fifth-year option, franchise again, really, if it comes to that. Now, in the past, that was a horrible idea because every year you'd go up to $45 million and $55 million. If you're worried about injuries, you can franchise the guy and then cut him loose. Franchise the guy again and cut him loose. If the contract wasn't guaranteed a couple of years down the road, it makes much more sense to, here's the contract, we'll guarantee it a year ahead as we go, et cetera. Now it makes more sense for organizations to do that. And that's what Lamar Jackson, in to part, has kind of put himself in because he didn't really negotiate last year, et cetera, et cetera. So it's now becoming more cost-effective for DeCosta and the Ravens to say, okay, play under your fifth-year option this year. And if you have a MVP year, maybe we'll talk, but if you have another year that's kind of like, okay, you're Pro Bowl alternate, et cetera, you had injuries, we'll just franchise tag you. It's a weird way of doing business, but it might be what we see in the wake of Deshaun Watson.
Or if the quarterback says, I'm not going to play for $43 million this year. You know, I don't know what the price of poker is when you're getting $2.5 million a game at that point, right?
But if you hold out, it is not accrued against your pension anymore. So you can't just hold out because you lose a season of accrued veterancy and all these other things that come in, and they can fine you and the fines can't be waived easily. Aaron Rodgers came back last year. Aaron Rodgers, who doesn't give a damn about anybody and thinks that, you know, he's immune to illnesses and things like that, decides to come back when he's ticked off at the Packers. Guess what? Lamar Jackson is going to hold out from a mandatory activity if there's $40 million on the table.
Well, that's what I said. We spend a lot of time talking about it, and certainly the Twitter world is – there's a lot of tweeting about Lamar's contract and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think the Ravens are, like, nearly as concerned about it as we are. But I think from a cap certainty standpoint, they've already penciled that in.
Right.
But part of that is they have to hit on players, right? And this is where we go to these tight ends, these fourth round players. Mike Tenier is here. He is the original running gun gangster at Football Outsider. Please follow him. Even though he's from Philly, he's not a bad guy. We're going to get a cheesesteak at some point before this is all over with. I almost came up to Philly to see Tommy Conwell and the Young Rumblers on Saturday night over at the Ardmore. I should have looked you up. That might have been something you might have come over and shaken it with me a little bit. But for the fourth round and the second, third round picks, I mean, all the way through, wherever you get to a B with them, how many of these guys are going to get on the field? First things first, the punter's going to punt, and they created a circumstance here with Sam Cook. That is, you know, inevitable, I guess. But at this point, there's a bunch of other players that they want to get on the field, including this gigantic tackle from Australia, from Melbourne.
Falele.
Yes.
Yeah, and he's a guy I kind of am back and forth about in their system with the Ravens, who've had good success with really huge tackles and making sure they're game ready. I think I'm comfortable with him saying he could turn into a right tackle or guard for you. His weight goes up into the 390 range. And what you have to worry about is when these guys get into about 390, 400 at 22, 23, they don't necessarily, they're going to get those foot injuries and those ankle injuries and hip injuries and things like that. And history tells us those guys wash out of the league. A lot of guys like Aaron Gibson in the past. So that's the concern. But in the fourth round, a guy his size for a team that has worked with guys who don't have the best workout results, I think Falele can be a potential starter for the Ravens. Did that put a lot of risk out for him? And if he works, again, this is your road grader. This is, he goes in a straight line. It's a $20 Uber to go around him. He's so big. And you can run Dobbins, you can run Lamar Jackson, whoever behind him.
Well, Mike, there was so much on the first round around here about taking a defensive tackle in the interior of the defense to support Calais Campbell and to replace Brandon Williams and, you know, all that went on in the middle of the defense. Even Wolf, that, you know, was here but not really here.
Right.
The pick happens before Hamilton. Most boards had Hamilton way above him and long gone by the time the Ravens would pick. So that wasn't even an option. One of the reasons Hamilton was there is the pick in front of him took the tackle, right?
Right.
But the defensive tackle position, certainly if you're analyzing the team, all those years with Brandon Williams, there were weeks where he wasn't there, sick, out, hurt, whatever. Their run game defense took on water whenever he wasn't there during the prime of his career. Last 2-3 years, he had a big contract. Some would say he played to it or at it or below it the last couple of years, but they needed help there. Do they get it in the third round?
I think they got a very good player in the third round in Travis Jones. I mean, if Jordan Davis would have been there, that would have been a really nice fit. We'd be talking about Jordan Davis being a great selection. Travis Jones is a very strong, very natural, pure nose tackle. So there's nothing fancy about Travis Jones's game. You're not gonna be like, oh, he's gonna get 8 sacks or 9 sacks up the middle of the field. He's going to get in there. He's going to eat up double teams. He's going to be hard to move. If you single block him, he's going to mess with the center, mess with the guard, cause a disruption in there. And then they talk about the phone booth. In the phone booth in there, he's going to be a very, very good player. So that was another guy that we were all excited about. Like Travis Jones was a late first round grade for me, but I realized he might fall to the second because a pure nose tackle who doesn't get sacks is not, it's not valuable. Like centers are not valuable. Safeties are not valuable. You know, a nose tackle who's not going to get you, you know, 10 sacks is not valuable. The Ravens pick him up. I don't know. I don't think he's Brandon Williams in his prime by any stretch of the imagination, but you fill a need there. You're going to have a guy who can get in, take a lot of snaps in there and eat up the running game.
Yeah, Mike, one of the issues with the Ravens going into this offseason, just with the injuries and the amount of money they've spent, we talked about Lamar at length, right?
Yes.
Mark Andrews, top of class, great player. Kicker, they got the best kicker on earth, right? All of that. Marlon Humphrey, we can still argue where he is. And then these guys in the hall of trying to get there, the Patrick Queens and the Reddick, the guys they got to get back out onto the field. Ronnie Stanley, certainly, as a huge cap number and all of that is a question mark. For them to find value and find a player and say, we've got a 5-6 year starter in our program, somebody that's going to be here for a period of time. It feels like the tackle, maybe not so much, but Ajabu is the steal of all of this, right? Like, he's a guy that would have been a top dozen, top 15 kind of pick. Yep. He might have been a guy that at 14, they would have been elated about. The injury happens. This is what, and they rarely do this. Take injured guys. They had so many injuries last year that created havoc for them. One of the other kids they took in the fourth round had some injury history as well. And they're always going to get questioned about this. This feels like he's going to heal. He's going to be fine. And everyone would have loved him at 14. So the Ravens wind up getting three guys that when they went to the Senior Bowl or like that, they looked at these guys and said, any one of these three guys, if we get them at 14, we're taking care of a place on our field. And now they wind up with three of them. And you still gave them a B, Tanier. You're still focused on this wide receiver thing.
Right. You're right. Three guys I probably would have put in the top 25, because a job I would put in the top 25. I think I kept him in at like 25 after taking him down from 15 for the injury, because I assumed a team like the Bills or the Buccaneers would have been like, eh, we can stick a guy on bench for a year, you know, what the heck, you know, because we're at the top of the game here, you know. So the Ravens don't look like that team this year. In the past, they've been that team. Yeah, we can wait a year, and they took him. I had Travis Jones in the top 32 as well. So you got that. So Hamilton's going to be a starter. Lindebaum's going to be a starter. And Ojabo will probably be a starter in 2023. Jones will be a starter or a rotation guy, and that's phenomenal. And yes, it would absolutely have been an A if you didn't lose your number one receiver to get one of the guys and replace him with a nothing burger. So it really is
a music guy. You know, you got a gift to get. You know that. I mean, come on.
You write songs
about this.
You just lost your lead guitar player, and you brought in a horn section. So, you know, it's a big deal, you know. So maybe you're going to
just like when Aerosmith brought in Dufay and Crespo for Perry and Whitford. Is this like when Aerosmith brought in Dufay and Crespo?
There you go. Right. Or like the Grateful Dead brought in the Godchows or something like that. Like
when Van Halen brought in Gary Cherone.
That's bad. We're not going to do that. I forgot that guy's name. Come on.
Oh, well, I mean, more than words.
That wouldn't be a B in the draft. That would not be a B in the draft if you brought in Gary Cherone. That's different.
Hey, saying more than words. He did okay. Give me some more than words on the fourth round, because I know we talked about Falele and where they were, but they had so many options with all of those guys. They allegedly lost a wide receiver that they wanted to the Steelers, but they did pick up corners. They picked up the tight ends to complement what they're doing on offense, and I don't know that two tight ends make a wide receiver. That's for you to do the math on that. You're the mathematician here today. But two tight ends, does it make a wide receiver in this particular case?
I mean, it doesn't. It makes an offense that runs two tight ends constantly. So you probably want four or five on the depth chart who can play. That makes sense. Likely is your downfield threat guy in the future. He's like the Eagles have the Dallas Goedert. You know, every team wants the guy. He's from a small college, but he runs like a wide receiver, and he can dunk on the basketball court and all that. And that's who Likely is. So you bring him in, and it's like, well, he could do Mark Andrews type of things down the field if you don't have Mark Andrews or you want to try and set something up. I think Kolar is a little bit more of your all-purpose tight end. Not bad value, again, for the team there, but you alluded to Calvin Austin, and that's the story that they wanted. Calvin Austin would have been a great addition there because he's a guy you can line up all over the receiver positions, give him the ball short, have him run sweeps, have him run reverses, do some of that stuff that DuVernay sometimes does, but has more downfield possibility as well. So you lose out on him. I like the two tight ends in general. Falele, again, at the fourth round, that's a good value. That's a good, because he's got this guy could be like a unique individual. Alabama cornerback Armour Davis, upside potential guy. Yeah, and that makes sense. Bring in the guy. He is tall. He is fast. He hasn't played a lot. Get him out there and develop him. That's your succession game guy, hopefully. And I don't know much about the other one.
Or as I tweeted out, it was inevitable that an Alabama corner would be involved at some point.
Marlon Humphrey take you under the right wing, and they can all look up at the pictures of all the other Alabama defensive backs and linebackers over the years. I'm not a fan of punters in the fourth round. I know Stoutley's supposedly a holder. That's part of the deal, and that's going to help. That solves the problem there. You know, Areza, the all-world punter from San Diego State, was on the field at that point, was on the block. There were other punters on the block. Seventh round, you can get punters. You can get holders for field goals anywhere. You could just bring guys off the street and have them work with Tucker and see who he likes, et cetera. That's a weird pick in the fourth round when, again, there's receivers running around out there that you could get at that point, not a punter. So that was another thing that I looked at. I didn't talk about, but like, really? I, you know, that's not a great solution to the fact that, you know, you were aging at punt.
All right. Well, you know, we can argue that forever. The kickers and the punters, they argue that in the Hall of Fame room, right?
It's in the fourth round. You're grabbing a guy in the fourth round when there are wide receiver threes everywhere. And you're taking, and if you look at the history of punters and kickers, it's not phenomenally great in terms of their hit rate. You might have just gotten a very ordinary guy that you could assign free agents off the waiver wire for. So.
All right. Well, you know, this is why you go to Football Outsiders. Tell everybody about what you do, subscribing, finding you guys, because as much as the league's 365, you guys are really, you know, at the top of your game this time of year on the off season, evaluating this stuff. So the guys like me and Luke, and I know who Luke relies on you guys tremendously, you, Aaron, everybody, that provides a little color and some wisdom for whatever analytics Eric DaCosta is looking at. It's guys like you doing that kind of work.
Yeah, we are the oldest and best football analytics site on the internet. We've been doing this since 2005. We are the house of DVOA. You come in during the off season, you'll see a lot of analysis of the draft, a lot of analysis of last year's statistics, and a lot of looks ahead to next year, in addition to some fun stuff like history. And then it really ramps up in the preseason when we really start digging into this, and we sell our Football Outsiders almanac. So you come to Football Outsiders, you become an FO Plus member, and you'll be shocked at the amount of statistical breakdowns you can get about things like third downs and goal lines and first quarter versus fourth quarter on various players and various teams, special teams, drive stats, et cetera, et cetera.
Do you think this is an enhancement to Wager?
Oh, gosh, yes.
In the old days, this was just to be like a nerd and know more and all that. But in the new era, I could highly encourage everyone that if you are betting on this, and Marvin Lewis would always sit there with film of me back in 1996, 97, he'd have his little red pointer and something crazy would happen with Ike Booth or with, you know, Donnie Brady, and the ball would self-combust. And he would look at me, he'd say, I can't believe people bet on this.
let me tell you something. First of all, FO Plus members, they get access to our picks, and they're against the spread picks and straight up picks for your pools, et cetera. We can do things like, I made a killing this year on first quarter DVOAs. Excuse me, first quarter props. So, it's the Steelers against the Ravens. I'm taking the Ravens in the first quarter. The reason why is DVOA at Football Outsiders will tell you that teams are very bad or very good in the first quarter. There are teams that always drive down and score, and there are teams that never drive down and score. And we have that fingertip away access. So on Thursday night, on Monday night, I'd be able to look at a first quarter over-under, get the win on that, and then be ahead for the rest of the game. I could turn the game off. Like, I won my pop prop. I'm going to bed now on Thursday night.
Are you proudly wagering on the National Football League?
Huh?
Are you proudly wagering on the National Football League?
Proudly and legally in the state of New Jersey. So I am proudly and legally wagering and talking about wagering because I can.
If it's I've been 31 years on the radio. They would have thrown me out of everything ever. Like, it's incredible. I mean, if you've been doing this a long time, I don't bet on football because it's not that I don't think I know enough. I just don't think it's sustainable.
It's not an investment. It's like spending money on drinks, or it's like spending money on a video game. I spend a little money on gambling. I usually come out pretty good because of Football Outsiders FO Plus. But I was going to say,
you know a lot. You know more than taking a card in a blackjack deck, and you're a mathematician at heart. So, like, you really know when there's value as you see it.
Let's put it this way. I don't bank on making a lot of money. I come out a little bit ahead. And, you know, that's great. It's like having a savings bond.
Well, I'm going to call every Friday in season. We'll find out what Mike's picks are.
You talked about, you know, you're proudly gambling now. What does Elliot Ness say at the end of The Untouchables? They say, Elliot Ness, they're repealing prohibition. What are you going to do now? And he turns and says, I'm going to have a drink.
All right. You know, well, drink away. Drink it in. Mike Tenier is the original run and gun gangster. He's at Football Outsiders. We love having him on. At some point, you and I will go high on a hill in Philadelphia, watch some music. Have you been to the man recently to see a show?
20 years. Years to see.
When I say high on a hill, I mean that. Like, it's a beautiful. My friend Toby runs it. Baltimore guy runs the facility up there. And any chance I get up, they always feel special to do a night up there, look down over the city. And the last time I was up there was Robert Plant. I've seen Mellencamp up there. Some really great shows. So I'm hoping to get back up there this summer.
It's beautiful. Last time I was there, I was Ubering my son and his friends over to see a hip hop show. And I drove up and like, oh, the man, I love that. And drove back because that's all I did.
You got to get down here to Meriwether, man. Meriwether special. I did a documentary thing. Reminded me of our friend Steve Sable. I was on the stage doing the documentary for Hammerjacks. I was the old backstage music critic 30 years ago. And I did that over the weekend. But sitting in Meriwether on a spring day, whoo, I'm getting excited about music, Mike. All right.
I am too. I'm going to see a Yes tribute band in a couple of weeks.
All right. Well,
Little steps forward.
When they went to Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Getty sat in because Chris Squire, we lost him to leukemia. Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to the tribute bands. I save a little money on my end. And because at this point, it's sad. I want to support the bands, but as guys are getting older, fading, you know, some 35-year-olds are recreating, Fragile and Close to the Edge. That's a lot of fun. I can see that, and then I can be home 5 minutes after the concert. So,
good. Yeah. I'll get you next time. Get the Let Out comes around. We'll go get
there
Let
you
out.
Go.
There he goes. Mike Tenniere, the Running Gun gangster, guitarist, rocker, mathematician, and Philadelphian by Jersey birth. Find him at Football Outsiders. Always good to visit with you. Mike Tenniere here. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, keeping you all informed of all things draft. Luke's out in Owings Mills. You can find him at Baltimore Luke as well. We are BaltimorePositive.com.